So today's expert, okay, he's no stranger to the webinar, is Erlend Bakker. Okay, now Erlend Bakker is a Norwegian entrepreneur, as you probably hopefully are aware. He's a speaker, he's an author, he's very young, he's only born in 1981, so, and in London, UK. Now he's currently in New York, now because this gentleman here, does live an entrepreneurial life. He can move to any city he wants to because he does not have to work to make money. Everything is pretty much set for him. All these systems are set, so he doesn't have to work. He can actually live in any city he wants, and I've never met anyone like this guy, which this gentleman here today, that actually does live this dream. I've never met anyone that actually lives like this. So, you can certainly learn something from Erlend here today. So he's currently a CEO and founder of Mr. Outsource, Uspin, and 360 Factory. He manages 20 employees in two countries and lives between San Francisco, London, Oslo, Davao City, and in the Philippines. And now he's living in New York City. Now, as a member of the young breed of forward-thinking businessmen, he advocates the idea of leading a freedom lifestyle while building cash flow through business. Now, Erlend trains entrepreneurs in how to start, run, and own freedom businesses through his seminar, The Freedom Bootcamp. Now, you can learn a bit more about that in thefreedombootcamp.com. He's also got a membership site, worklessearnmore.tv, and he's also, like me, he's got a podcast which he runs. Okay, and that's in invisibleentrepreneur.tv. Very creative name, Erlend. Okay, and in 2013, he first published the book, Never Work Again. And if I were you, I'd actually seriously look on the Google and try to actually find his book there and buy a copy. Now, which is focused on applying freedom to your life as well as your business by cutting the crap and getting real about your true needs and desires. Now, that's a bit of a bio about Erlend. Now, without further ado, let's welcome Erlend. Erlend, how are you today, my friend?
I'm very good, thank you.
It's very, very good to have you on.
It is bright and early here in New York today. It's going to be an amazing day. So I'm thinking, should I spend this day in the office or should I go outside and do something else? Maybe go kayaking. I'm not sure.
Kayaking in what? In which lake? In
Hudson River.
Hudson River.
You can rent a kayak off the road.
That's
and
great.
You can go kayaking, and you can see the entire New York skyline when you go kayaking. So it's a really cool experience. I've never done it, but it's meant to be really good.
Well, you can, as long as you can say you can actually do it, you have the luxury to do it, but you don't have to do it, my friend, if it's too cold or if it's out of your comfort zone. But you can do it. That's the most important thing. All right, buddy. So you are a professional outsourcer. Okay.
Yes.
So, let's get started with it, man. What's so good about outsourcing?
Okay. So, I'm from Norway, and Norway has one of the – well, in Norway, it's really, really expensive to employ people. So you're looking at paying people at least $16 an hour, and that's U.S. dollars. The minimum wage is around $16 to $18, I believe. And on top of that, you pay 14.6% additional tax to the government. So it's incredibly expensive to employ people in Norway. People have, 5 to 6 weeks holiday. And when I was starting a business, I just simply couldn't afford to have anybody work for me there. And the cool thing right now is that you have a global talent pool of people that you can choose from. So you can choose to employ somebody in the US or Australia or Croatia or anywhere else. So or the Philippines, of course, which we're an expert at. So when you think about outsourcing, for me, outsourcing isn't, cheap labor in Bangladesh. It is outsourcing to everywhere. So on any given week, we're working with people in Australia, that's where we have our SEO people, and, my copywriter, he's in Canada, I'm in the U.S., and our programmers are in Croatia. So it's such a cool world because you can go to all these countries, and most people now, speak fairly good English. It's more and more an international culture. We watch the same kind of movies, we listen to the same kind of music, and because people are worried about the cultural differences. Now, there are some cultural differences, but overall, It's about finding great people.
Exactly, exactly. And you, because you actually run over 20 employees, you manage over 20 employees in different parts of the world, is that particularly hard to manage, or is it you pretty much got a pretty good system down pat for that?
Right. So every single company has four departments. And the first one is the CEO, the Chief Executive Officer. Oh, I managed to say that today. Usually I struggle with saying that. End up saying something like Chief Execution Officer.
That's in certain countries like the Middle East.
Right. So the CEO is basically the captain of the ship, right? So he knows where you're going, why you're going that direction, and he keeps everybody in line. Then you have your sales and marketing people or department, and then you have your admin and operations, and then you have production. And the cool thing here is that every single company in the whole world has the same. You have to have these four things. If you're a solopreneur, you are all those roles, and that's just important to know. So what I've done is that I've set in place people that are in charge of all those things. So I have basically have three CEOs that are in charge of the sales and marketing, the production, and the administration, which means I'm speaking directly to the CEO, and we're talking about, you know, what are we doing in this business, and should we be doing more of this or more of that, and that's how I manage it. So and I actually don't manage the 20 employees. I talk to the CEOs a couple of times a week. Some days I don't speak to them at all, and they move things forward. So they're managing people underneath themselves again, and that's how I built up the businesses.
Wow, that's awesome. And to me, I've never actually managed a large scale like what you are currently doing at the moment. To me, it sounds pretty intense. I mean, to get everyone actually following the captain of the ship and you organizing that, you're just like the orchestra, you know, like the conductor. And so, is it once you actually get the hang of it, is it that hard to actually keep the operation going?
Well, one of the very, very, one of the most important things with when you're an entrepreneur is to measure stuff. So, you know, if you look at the my book cover, okay. So my book cover, I'm not sure if you've seen my book, but my book cover is basically yellow and blue, and it's got a picture of a beach on it. And before we published my book, we actually tested 18 different covers. And the cover that we're now using is converting 380% better than the first cover. Now, the first cover was the cover that I wanted to publish because it had a lot of meaning. It was very spiritual to me. But that's all good and well. But people don't want to buy my spirituality. They want to buy what they want.
Exactly.
So we changed the cover, and 380%. Maybe it doesn't sound like that much, but it actually results in thousands of more book sales. So testing and measuring stuff in your business is incredibly important. So what can you measure in your business? Well, you can measure how much time people spend on certain tasks, what the result of that is. You know, is it profitable? Is it making money? So measuring is a key part of running a successful business, and you should be looking for things to measure. So we measure, you know, website traffic. We measure different landing pages. We measure how much people work, how much profit there is on that, how much production we have. So basically, you know, every single week I get a production report on the different businesses. We see, okay, how many sales did we get, at what price, what is the revenue. And I don't do it monthly. I do it every single week. And that tells me, like, oh, should we be spending more on marketing? Should we be getting more people? Should we be doing this? And obviously, the CEO is also got their eye on the road, their ear to the ground, I guess the saying is.
They always got
the measuring stuff is really powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes total sense, because you know what to actually work on, what actually needs improvement on. So that makes total sense what you're saying. Now, can you give us a little bit of background? When did you first start outsourcing? How did you get started in something like this and become so proficient at it?
Okay, so that was totally random. So Basically, I'd started my photography business. Of course, like most entrepreneurs, I was doing everything myself because that's what entrepreneurs do. You know, we're trained to think like employees. We go to school. We get told to sit down, shut up, get on with the work. Don't challenge authority. You're not allowed to model other people's work, modeling or copy other people's work. So basically, you know, go out there, look at other people are doing, and then take elements of that and then just do the same. Because if somebody's doing it and they're making money, then you can do the same and make, you know, money as well. Another thing is like leveraging other people's time, which is the big one. You know, at school we're taught to do everything ourselves. We have to learn all the skills. And a lot of the things that we're doing today, I actually don't have the skills anymore. So for instance, if you asked me to photograph a product, I wouldn't know how to do it anymore. What I do now is a very, very different way than I used to. I used to go out there and learn all the skills myself, which is because that's what we're trained to do at school. But now what I do is, okay, I decide on something and then I build a team around it to do it. So I actually don't have the skill set to do it myself.
Yeah.
And I think that's what separates me to other entrepreneurs is most entrepreneurs go out there and try to learn everything themselves. You know, you'll watch the 400 million video tutorials and, you know, you'll buy all these courses and they're sitting on your shelf because you're not having – you should be buying a course and giving it to somebody else and then get them to implement it. And I did that with our dropshipping website. I actually bought an information marketing course. I gave it to one of my employees. They had a deadline to implement it. They had to watch the tutorials. They had to educate me why they were doing what they were going to do. And that website was built on the back of somebody else's time. So I had time to do other stuff. And it's weird because in life we're outsourcing. So where do you go when you're ill?
Doctor.
Okay, so where do you go if your car breaks down?
To the mechanic.
Right. So we kind of have I do this all the time. You know, I try to delegate and outsource everything and systemize it as well. But when it comes to the crazy thing is when it comes to people's business, they tend to do everything themselves. So they'll build their own website, they'll do their social marketing. And they'll do, you know, build the product, and they'll keep on doing everything themselves, and it's and they don't have any time, and they start hating what they do, and they don't get it done, and they fail. So my big message to people is, you know, really, really start, you know, get clear on what you want to have done, and then find somebody else to do it, because it isn't the entrepreneur's job to actually execute it.
Yeah, yeah, and
the entrepreneur's job is to build a team to make it happen.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. And when you mentioned back in school, they actually condition you in a certain way, where that's where that saying comes from. Where if you want it done it right, you got to do it yourself. You know what I mean? So that's something it goes against your grains now because you're so conditioned to being able to delegate and outsource the work. But you make total sense when you say if you want to go to a doctor, if you're sick, you go to a doctor. If your car's wrecked, you go to a mechanic. So why is it any different as to building your business? Yeah. So
I guess another challenge is that a lot of people have, you know, they have plumbers fixing cars and vice versa. So, you know, and I would like to also like to say like this is not something we're typically trained to do. You know, we haven't been trained in school to delegate, outsource, leverage other people's time, you know, identify what tasks are repetitive, what projects are, you know, is it a project-based task, is it a repetitive task, how do you get somebody else to do it? You know, you don't even learn that when you do an MBA. You know, MBA is big business stuff. So it's the key skill set, and it is the most important skill set for any entrepreneur. You know, 95% of all businesses are small. It is because it's the biggest paradigm shift. The biggest paradigm shift for any entrepreneur is to go, okay, I'm not going to do everything. I want to let go. I'm going to have other people do it. This is the system that we're going to do it in, and I'm going to let them get on with their work. So most businesses are small. In fact, 95% of businesses have revenue of less than 1 million. 95% of businesses have revenue less than $1 million.
Wow. They put a limiting belief. Like 1 million sounds like a big number to some people, but it's actually nothing these days.
No, it's nothing.
They cap themselves by saying, you know, look, 1 million, I'll never be able to achieve that. You know what I mean? So they cap themselves. Sorry to interrupt you, Earl. Keep going, my friend.
No, absolutely. And it's just such an important skill set. And I usually, you know, when I do webinars, I have this slide up with all the sort of masters of business. So, you know, have you flown Virgin Atlantic?
I have, yes.
Right. And did Richard Branson check you in at the airport?
No, he didn't. Of course not. Yeah.
Did he serve you meals?
No. But if you ask Stephen Esser that question, he'd probably give you a different answer, because he did actually buy Stephen Esser a drink. He was actually on the same plane as Stephen Esser, and he actually shouted everyone on the plane a drink. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, wow. It's actually on YouTube.
Okay. Oh, he
Yeah, I think Steve Esser films everything. He doesn't go anywhere without his camera. So if you type in Richard Branson shouts Esser a drink, I think you'll find it there on YouTube. It's hilarious.
Okay.
All right.
The thing with Richard Branson, though, is that he dropped out of school. Okay, that's a normal thing. So they go, okay, this stuff isn't going to work for me. So they drop out of school when they're like, you know, 16, 18, whatever. So he dropped out of school, and the first company started. What was his first company?
I think it was it Virgin Records?
It was a magazine.
A magazine, okay, sorry.
And the guy's dyslexic.
That's incredible.
So how could he start a magazine if he didn't outsource, if he didn't delegate, if he didn't go, I have this vision for what I want to happen, and how am I going to make it happen? Because I can't write this stuff myself, so I need to get somebody else to write my stuff for me. So from the very beginning, he was outsourcing. And now he's got 400 companies, and he doesn't even know how he barely knows how to use a computer. You know, he's not tweeting and tooting and YouTubing and all that stuff. He's got people doing that for him that really understand what they're doing. The only thing he has is big visions, the capability of leveraging other people's time and inspiring people to deliver. That's his only skill set. And if you look at the master slide, that is the common denominator of every single highly successful entrepreneur. That's it. That's the secret.
Yeah, absolutely. So if someone wants to get started, Earl, and they've got a little small internet marketing business, what is the best way to get started for them to actually start outsourcing?
Okay, so first of all, it is actually getting clear that this is something that you're willing to do. You want to invest in other people, and you understand the benefit of it. Okay, and then you need to understand that there is a learning curve. So, you know, if you're going to get them to do what you do, it's going to take a little bit of time for them to understand what you do. So that is one thing. But it really depends on what you want to do. So if you get clear on, okay, I'm going to focus on Facebook marketing for my business, that's my goal, then you can specialize in that first. Because what a lot of people do is that they'll take like 25 to 30 tasks, and they'll just like dump them on somebody. And they'll go like, okay. It's important to start with, you know, with a couple of tasks so that they get up to speed. And you do need to spend a little bit of time finding the right person for you. Because once you find that person, so basically my team in the Philippines I've been working with now for the past 6 years. So my key people are the same people. We've built loyalty, we've built trust, you know, they basically know how to run everything for me. And that isn't like a light switch. You know, that is something that takes time over a few years to build that kind of relationship. Right?
Yeah,
to build
absolutely.
The trust and build to educate people. And I'm, you know, when I delegate something and to somebody else and they start doing it, it frees up my time. So what do I spend my time on? Well, a lot of the time I'm educating myself by reading business books, right? So I'll you know, measure things in your business. That's something I read in the business book.
Yeah.
And then I'll implement that. Okay. So basically we'll say, okay, these are the elements we're going to start measuring. And then I get them to measure it, and then they send me a weekly report. But my business is basically run now without me. So what do I used to have a lot of time to just do whatever I wanted to, and I still do, and I can work from anywhere, et cetera, et cetera. But how do I spend my time? Well, I'm not really lying on the beach, and I'm not really just not doing anything. I'm actually spending that time, you know, launching a new podcast and doing interviews and speaking, and I get a lot of energy from that. But to answer your question, to get started, you just need to start. And you start by saying, okay, I do understand that if I want freedom in my life, I can't do everything in my business. Yeah, it's cool with, you know, AdSense and opt-in pages and all these things. But, you know, if I really, really want to make it happen, then I do have to start looking to other people to run things for me. So that, for me, that has been the solution to managing what I have. And also being able to, you know, move from, I lived in San Francisco, and then I lived in London, and now I live in New York. And that's because I have people in place and because I trust them, I have built systems around them, I've delegated. That's why I can do what I do.
Absolutely. And one cool tip I remember you actually mentioned, Erland, was how you run your email system. Can you touch a bit about that, please? I just want to hear it from you again.
My daily update?
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay. So basically every single day I get an email from my key people. And in the email it says, first of all, the title is the date, today's date, and then the amount of hours that they have worked. So in the email, what you need to do is there's 3 points. The first point is what I did today. So they have to write down a list of all the tasks that they did, which keeps them accountable to actually doing stuff. So if they said 8 hours and they wrote one blog post, it's just like,
yeah,
that doesn't take 8 hours. So you hold them accountable. So it's an easy way to measure what people are doing. Number two is challenges I encountered. So basically, we're looking into SoundCloud and Stitcher at the moment, and I believe SoundCloud has a monthly fee of, you know, $5-$6 a month. And he's saying, you know, I'm looking for a free version of SoundCloud at the moment. I've only found this option at $6, right? Mm-hmm. And number three is questions I have for you. So the question there would be, do you want us to go ahead and set up an account with SoundCloud, even though it's $6 a month? Because that's the decision that I need to make, because it's, you know, it's a monetary decision that's going to cost, you know, a few $100 a year. So that's, you know, he wants me to make a decision on that. So that the daily update is really, really powerful. And what it does, it frees you from chit chatting with people the whole day, because they know at the end of the day, they send you the daily update, and then you reply to that. It takes about, you know, 3 to 5 minutes, and then for the rest of the day you're actually free. So part of my 30 minutes a day that I work is actually replying to these daily updates, because when I do that, everything's running smoothly.
Yeah.
They'll deal with the customers. I don't deal with the customers. They deal with the customers.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. It's so easy. So if you want to take something away, that's one way to actually manage your stuff. So basically one thing I wanted to ask you as well, because people want to hear some real life examples of how it works for other people. I know you're a genius at this, Erland. You become pretty proficient, quite proficient at actually outsourcing. Can you tell us some real life situations where you've helped someone and they started applying what you have taught them?
Yeah, I mean, I think the best example is a friend of mine, which actually I helped out before I started Mr. Outsource. Mr. Outsource is basically a recruitment company for entrepreneurs. So if you're looking for a person to help you get started, then actually I didn't reply to that question earlier. How did I get started in outsourcing? I'll get back to that. But Claire Yu, she's a fashion designer. She was working all the time. She didn't have any time. She didn't have much money. And I helped her find her first Filipino outsourcer. And, you know, she's now just like quadrupled revenue. And, you know, she was, she travels all over the world. And she's also, she has a lot more time on her hands, because she now has a whole team in the Philippines that does, you know, her online store and her customer service and her online chat. And so her team in the Philippines basically manages a lot of her business. So so that's, I think that's the best example, because she, you know, that was just something that I helped her with. So basically I just asked my team in the Philippines, like, I have a friend, she wants a VA, do you know anybody? That's how I started Mr. Outsource. Because then I saw, other entrepreneurs actually need this this service. So that's my best example. And she's been outsourcing now for about 3 years, and she's very successful at it as well. And it's just by implementing, you know, the daily update, having repetitive tasks that they do every single day, and she's getting better and better at it as well. So how did I get started in outsourcing? Well, I was editing lots and lots of images. So I had a photography business. And we were doing something called 360 photography. And in 360 photography, there's a lot of image editing. So I was editing all the images, and the sun was coming up. I had Red Bull in one hand, my trusted mouse in the other. And I just had I had RSI. RSI is basically repetitive strain injury. And both of my hands were hurting so much. My shoulder hurt, my back hurt. I was just like, I can't go on doing this, and I couldn't afford to employ somebody in Norway. So what did I do? Well, I looked at the internet and I started doing research, like, where are people outsourcing to? India was one place, but then I read some stuff about the Philippines, and I was like, okay, I'm going to try the Philippines. So I posted an ad on a website called sulit.ph.com, I believe, but just search S-U-L-I-T, and I got about 30 applicants. I sent them a test where they had to edit some images. I had made a mistake in the images that they were editing, and the people that didn't spot the mistake, they were out. And then I was left with about 5 people, and the best guy of those 5 people was a guy called Rimon, and he's now my business partner in 360 Factory, and we've been working together now for more than 6 years. So that's how I got started. It was really a pain in my business. I said, okay, I can't handle this anymore. I need somebody else to do it. And then we built up that relationship. And on the back of that is how all these things have happened.
And you actually went to the hospital at one stage from actually overwork.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true as well. And that was a bit of a trigger point for you in this business. That's what you needed to actually probably get more involved into delegating your work, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I had actually delegated quite a lot of my work, but I was still micromanaging. I was still kind of, you know, very much on all the time. I was, you know, doing my 18-hour days and just working, and at some point, you know, my body just said stop, and I had what's called a panic attack, and I had no idea what it was. So I was taken to the hospital, and they checked my heart and all that, and it was a very strange experience, and it's not something that I wish anybody on this call ever has, but it was weird. But it basically, what I had to do was just step away from my business for about 3 months and let things run. And what turned out to happen was that I'd actually put in place enough systems and people so that it worked without me. So so that was the ultimate test. And it's also incredible, like, how much responsibility somebody else will take if you have the right people. You know, if something happens to you, they'll say, because people want to do stuff. People want to be trusted in. If you find the right people, they want to do the work. They want to show you that, you know, I can take charge of this. I can handle this. They want to
prove to you.
They want to grow as well. Yeah, they want the opportunity to say, oh, yeah, I'm the manager of this company. That's status for them. And and that's what happened when that with the whole hospital thing was that that I had the right people in place, and they wanted to take care of what we built. So that was a great experience in terms of that. But everything else around it wasn't that good.
Yeah, no. Excellent, Erlen. Now, just before we tie it off, Erlen, I just wanted to ask you one simple question. If there's one secret to give about outsourcing, what would that be? If there was one secret you can probably do, take all your wisdom and all everything that you've learned, what would that one thing that people can take away today and start applying it, what would that secret be?
Okay, so I think it starts with a question, because we're always asking ourselves questions. Like, what does this mean? What's in it for me? How can I make this happen? How do I feel today? Why do I feel like this?
Yeah.
So the most important thing in terms of getting started is actually asking yourself, how can I get somebody else to do this for me? Because if you are the process, I heard this story about this painter in the, I think it was like the 16th century, and he actually found a way to systemize painting portraits. Right?
Interesting.
So even though you're an artist, you can actually systemize your business. there's an artist in New York. Is it Damien Hirst? I think it's Damien Hirst. It could be somebody else, but Damien Hirst used to work on Wall Street. He said, oh, screw this, I'm going to be an artist. And what he has, he's got a studio of 20 people painting and making all the stuff that he comes up with, because he doesn't have time to make all that stuff himself. So he's actually systemized and outsourced creating art. So my point of saying this is that you really don't have an excuse. Everything in the world can be systemized and delegated. So if you start asking yourself the question, how can I get somebody else to do this for me? That is the question that you need to start asking yourself. Because then after that follows, okay, is this a repetitive task? Is it a project-based thing? And then you start thinking about, okay, maybe this person can do it. Maybe this person can do it. And you start trying it. Because if you're doing everything yourself, then you're not an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurs are people that make money while they sleep. So if you don't have that set up, you actually can't call yourself an entrepreneur.
Exactly. And it's sometimes when you actually are hitting that roadblock, Earl, and we said, I can't do this. I can't actually – I can't seem to actually make this much money this month. You got to always ask yourself, like exactly what you said. I like the example you use. How can I make $20,000 this month? How can I make – this month, and automatically something magical happens in your brain where you actually want it, just leads to you making that much money. So asking how is always a, so that's a really good tip there from you. It's a really good secret. I love that, actually, Erlen. So I think that about does it for today's interview. I wanted to give everyone an opportunity to be able to ask you a question or ask some questions for you, Erlen. So guys, I hope you actually wrote down your questions for Erlen, because here is your opportunity to ask him. If you have a personal situation or within your business where you wanted to ask him a question, please do so. Write it in the chat box and I'll bring you on the call so you can have a bit of a chat to him. While you're actually doing that, guys, I wanted to bring it to your attention. So, Erlen, if people wanted to know more about what you do, about your webinar, we have got a page here you created. It's your webinar, right? It's the 4hoursperweek.info. So, guys, if you want to actually know a bit more about Erlen and you want to pick up more about outsourcing and how to actually implement it in your business, he's got a fantastic webinar which is going to show you all that. He gives away awesome content, content that's going to leave a good taste in your mouth. You're definitely going to take away something from here. So go to 4hoursperweek.info to actually watch Erlen's webinar. So if you want to learn more about Erlen, just go to 4hoursperweek.info. Now, guys, do we have any questions for Erlen? Have you been typing your questions here? I think we've got a few here. Cat is asking a question. Cat, I'm going to try to bring you on the call. You are asking, so you can have a chat with Erlen as well. Can you please identify the biggest single challenge with your 20 outsourcers where they are in different time zones? Thanks, Tony. Cat's real name is Tony, so let me bring Cat on. He's got an alias, Cat. Let me just unmute Cat. Cat, you there? Or should I call you Tony?
Yes, I am. Tony's
fine. Hey,
thank you, Erlen. Good, thank you. Thank you very much for your thoughts. I did have a question. I have a couple of outsourcers from the Philippines to the States, and I find my biggest challenge is that they're on different time zones. So I know that you mentioned your updates are predominantly via email, but when you are speaking to them, do you ever, A, have to have a team meeting? And B, if you do, where all your team is on the same call, How do you manage it with the different time zones?
Okay, so you do need to find the sweet spot. So it's actually, when it comes to outsourcing globally, the best place to be is actually in London. Because if you look at the time now, it is 7 o'clock in, 7:40 here in New York, which means it's in LA, it is 5 in the morning. But in Europe, it's like 1 o'clock, right? And you guys are in the evening. So I think it's possibly what you need to do is have one weekly meeting, and you need to start getting good at, you know, making them independent and so that they can do tasks without you. So what you need to look at is what repetitive tasks are working in your business. So are there any repetitive tasks that they can just keep on doing every single day? So for instance, you know, writing articles about a specific niche or and posting that to Facebook, tweeting it, making a YouTube video for it, etc. So I typically have two meetings at different time zones with different types of people. So
right.
I'll do, but I actually have a lot of my Filipinos work my New York time now.
Right.
So in the Philippines, it's very normal to work nights because a lot of the outsourcing that's being done to the Philippines is coming from the U.S. So they're used to working, you know, starting work at 12 o'clock at night and working to 8 in the morning. So I actually have my parts of my team work my time zone when I'm somewhere else. So they adapt to where I am.
Right.
So that's one thing that I do. But it's really about feeling, you know, you kind of know what you should be doing. So if it's time for a team meeting, you should have a team meeting.
Yes.
If you feel like you should be speaking to somebody, you probably should be speaking to that person. Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can systemize it and say, you know, every Monday we do this team meeting. I think that's a good idea. I actually don't have a set time for everybody that where we meet every single week.
Right.
But we do that in the company. So the CEO will have like the team leader will be in charge of the team meeting. And maybe I'll have a meeting with the team leader before that meeting. Right?
Right.
So I'm consistently like cutting myself out of the loop.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
So I'll have a meeting with the team leader. I'll say, okay, these are the goals. This is what we need to be focusing on. You know, now make it happen.
Yeah. Okay.
Because if I become an integrated part of everything all the time, then it's kind of like everybody has a friend that can fix their computer. So every time something happens to your computer, you phone your friend.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what usually happens in any company is like the computer guy that can fix everything. That's usually the entrepreneur in the business, and that's why he's always stuck. Because you know, if something happens to the till, they go to you. They go to you and say, okay, this error is coming up, and then you give them the answer. But you can't be that person, because if you're that person, then you are your business
and the bottleneck as well.
Yeah. So if that error comes up, you got to say, you got to fix it. You know, look in the manual. So that it's not really that you should be unhelpful, because now it sounds like I'm being unhelpful. It's just that you need to train that person to know what they should be doing.
Right. And I just had one other add-on question,
sure,
if you don't mind.
Yeah.
Who is responsible for, let's say, the accounting, such as the contract payments, for your outsourcers? Is it your CEOs in the respective companies? Is it the admin section in the underneath each CEO? Or who manages that detail? Because obviously your outgoings is of importance. So I'm just curious to know who manages
that. It's the CEO. It's the main person.
Oh, yeah.
So one amount is transferred to that person, and then that person pays everybody.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you so much. I won't take any more time, but thank you.
Another thing is nobody actually has – we share a PayPal account, and on that PayPal account there's a few thousand dollars. Sometimes there's, you know, 10,000, other times there's like five. But that is used by my team in the Philippines to pay for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if they need to pay something or they need to take out some money, they can do that there. But the main funds, which is in our corporate accounts, that is managed by the CEO. And I funnel most of the money directly through one holding company. So I have a holding company that has three companies under it,
mm-hmm.
and most of the money goes through the holding company. So nobody cares about your money as much as you do.
That's it. Right?
Yeah. So that's why a lot of NBA stars and sports stars, they get screwed because they let other people manage their money. When it comes to outsourcing delegation, it's cool to do like everything but the management of your money. Because if you don't have your eye on your money, then people might go out and buy MacBooks for the entire team, and that's not a good idea, right? Because MacBooks are about like six times more expensive than a normal laptop.
Yeah.
So so it's kind of like keep your eye on the money, but outsource and delegate everything else.
Yes. Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you very much. Just in addition, you mentioned that you actually get people working the midnight shift. Do you have to pay them more money because of that, Erland?
No.
They're on the same wage. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Excellent. We got another question here. Alden's asking, have you tried Time Doctor? If so, what do you think of it? Alden, do you want to get on the call? I just want to ask Erland about Time Doctor. Alden, how are you going today?
Thank you for some great questions, by the way, guys. Really good questions. So keep them coming.
Thanks, Alden. Alden, you there?
Yes.
Hi. Yes, I'm here. Yes, I just wanted to ask. I've just started outsourcing through Erland's contact. I've had a girl for a few weeks, and actually, she's really in the last week, she's really picked up her game a lot. And I think a lot of what you're saying about being really clear on what you're doing with your outsourcers and having them be really clear on what you want is a huge thing, because while something might be clear in your head, it may not be clear in their head. And so anyway, lately I've been really happy with the girl that I've had, and we've been just trying out Time Doctor, and I just wanted to see whether what you thought of that. I quite like your idea of doing the emails, but I just wanted to check if you've used any of those sort of
I don't know what Time Doctor is. Is that a way of measuring people's time?
Yeah, it's basically a program where you can you basically log in and you can measure people's time. Basically, it's sort of like a way to track people's time. So, but it's a paid service. There's a free trial and then it's a paid service. So. So we've been just trialing it out, but I found it sort of a little bit messy. I think it might be just easy to keep things simple with just an email, actually.
So here's the thing. In my experience, in the early days, I was trying all sorts of software. And what I've come back to is just kind of using Excel spreadsheets. So when I say I get a production report every week, it's an Excel spreadsheet. When it comes to like data mining and sales and all these things, we don't use a CRM. We just use an Excel spreadsheet. So we've kind of gone away from all these like fancy solutions, and I'm a techie. Like, I love technology. If there's new technology coming out, I'm going to buy it. But I think less is more, and I think keep it simple as well. So for her timesheets, I think you should just have a Google Drive and have an Excel spreadsheet, and then at the end of the week she can send you her hours, and you get an email, and you can just go in and see, okay, these are the tasks, this is the hours, etc. So we tried using this, not Time Doctor, but another, I think it was called Harvest. And we just went away from it because it was expensive, and we just had people filling in our office, people fill in pieces of paper, and then one person just adds them to an Excel spreadsheet. So we've kind of gone back and just made it more simple, but it's different when you have 100 people. So 20 people, you can do it in one way. I think there's a certain number where things change and you have to actually start using software and stuff. But software can get really, really messy. And one example was when, in the early days, I entered every single customer into the CRM system. And then our accountant said, oh, we're going to change software. So, and I actually never used the CRM for what I should be using it for. So I guess the lesson here is like, yeah, just use Excel, and then if it becomes a problem, then you look for some software. And the group coaching I'm having today is actually about software, like what software I use and why I use it. Another great software is Evernote, which again is a very simple system, and it's similar to Google Drive, but it's just better for certain tasks. So use software, but use it, you know, why is the iPhone good? The iPhone's good because they simplified everything. So, you know, when my parents wanted to buy a smartphone, they were like, what phone should we buy? And I was like, buy an iPhone, because you know, you'll know how to use it. And they're going to be buying iPhones going forwards. And what Steve Jobs did with the iPhone was that he figured out that, you know, it's the 80-20 rule. You know, so that we only use about 20% of our apps 80% of the time. It's probably more like 1% of our apps 90% of the time, kind of thing. So if you see somebody with like 16 screens of apps, they're only using, you know, about 20% of them at any given time. So it's the same with software. So we get a new piece of software, we're only going to be using about 20% of that software.
Mm-hmm. Awesome stuff. Does that answer your question, Aldwyn?
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Okay. Do you have anything else you wanted to add?
Oh, no, I agree. I think keep things really simple. I think it's especially in today's world where we've just got so many options, you can just get bogged down in it, and it can take twice as long, you know, logging into all the different programs as it can to, you know, just to cut to the chase with one email. So
one of my friends is the top sales guy in a Norwegian company. And they've been trying to get him to use this fancy software for many years. And he's like, you know what? I'm the best sales guy here. I use Excel spreadsheets. That's how I run my show. If you have a problem with that, then I'll move to another company. That was his reaction. Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's because he's focused on the sales, not the software.
Yeah,
exactly. It can make it deviate from the plan when you actually have too much fancy stuff. I drive my car. I mean, basically, I don't use half the gadgets on there. But basically, 80% of the time, I'm just using the drive feature, just accelerate on the pedal.
Yeah.
So just keep it simple. That's a great way to look at it. Absolutely. So thanks for that, Aldwyn. I have a few more questions here. So I appreciate your question, Aldwyn. Thank you very much.
Great.
We have Joseph Leal asking a question. I'm going to bring Joseph here. I'm going to unmute Joseph. So, Joe, you there?
Hi.
G'day, Joseph. How you going, buddy?
Hello. I'm doing really, really well.
Surprised to have you on, mate.
I've moved to the country. I've got out of the rat race. I thought just by getting out of the rat race, it had helped me clarify what I was doing, because I found I was doing so many different things and getting overloaded and not doing any of them well. I thought by getting away from the rat race and not having to spend all that time travelling and the hurly-burly, this solution would manifest itself. Well, it hasn't. I had my blood pressure done the other day, and it's absolutely fantastic, and I'm enjoying living in the country and not sitting in traffic and having all that, those sort of hassles, and that, filling my car once every 2 months with petrol. It's really great, but one of the things that I've identified is that I'm trying to do too many things, and I think I got something from Erlen's presentation today, and which led me to the question that I've asked. is, Erlen, you say you have a CEO for each of your businesses. Mm-hmm. And the question I had is, did you actually hire them as a CEO, or No. did you have them doing just some tasks or tasks and then identified them as CEO material?
Yeah, so it started off with, you know, so basically the first one in 360 Factory started off basically me just transferring skills, you know, one by one. And after a few years, it kind of grows into that they're actually doing everything. So I think in my hires, it's been a natural evolution to saying, okay, you're now in charge. And people want that. People want to be in charge of stuff if it's the right kind of person. So
right,
it was
yeah.
more an evolution, and I didn't hire them as CEOs. And I'll tell you why. Because a lot of the companies that I've started a whole lot of companies that haven't worked, but the companies that are actually working, they've been sort of evolutionary. So you know, you start a photography business, then you start selling photography software. So it's still the same kind of niche in the same market,
yeah.
right? Outsourcing. So outsourcing started with image editing. And then, you know, I had people go, how does that work? And then, maybe I can have an outsourcer. So that, again, was an evolutionary company. So I think also that's a little what Richard Branson does. He'll see an opportunity in the market and he'll go, we can actually do this. So what is the key person that I actually have on staff right now that can implement that? So all the things that I've done have been evolutionary rather than sort of, what's the other word? Strategic. So it's been a natural organic growth from one place to the other.
Yeah. So when you selected these people, was it with a view to the future or just to do the task of the day, and then it just evolved into that they grew into the business?
Well, I think it's good to have you have to have a long-term perspective because the habits that you have in your life are important. So when you say you're doing too many things, maybe you're not so clear on the exact future that you want. And but you go through different phases as well. You know, some phases you are busy with like experimenting, and that's fine. And a lot of the companies that I've started have been experimental. You know.
Yeah. I've had a number of businesses. I've been called a serial entrepreneur.
Yeah.
But going by your definition, I don't think I am an entrepreneur.
Right.
But I'd like to be.
Yes.
But one of the businesses that I started, I thought I got a guy who was really, really great and a perfect fit. The problem was that he then wanted to be the CEO and thought he didn't need me, even though I bankrolled the business and got it going and everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason. I'm at the point where I've got a number of projects I want to do, and I'm struggling to find the right sort of people to work with.
Okay. So what happened with the guy that that wanted to be the CEO, and how did that? What happened there?
There was another issue that came up, and I decided I didn't want to be associated with him, so I just walked away.
Right. Okay.
Bottom line, I my local newspaper arrived, and the headline was that he was a wanted fugitive in the USA.
Right. Well, that's always a good start to the morning.
That's really great when you've spent $100,000+ establishing. Yeah. A business and you're just starting to get some traction
I think you know part of business is dating, you know, like do I like this person, do I trust this person, do I see a long future with them, would I let my daughter go out on a date with them, you know, so it is about identifying.
How do you do that if you're hiring these people online and you're not actually meeting them and getting to know them?
I think you build up trust over time. So initially, you know, you need to interview enough people, and then you need to give them just be aware of how people behave. So basically, you know, how you do anything.
So if somebody shows up late for a meeting,
you know, in the first week, then that's how they do everything. They're always late for a meeting.
Yeah, that's me.
Okay. So be sensitive. Be observant on how they are.
Yeah. One of the things I liked was that you said when you hired someone, you actually put a mistake in there to see whether they could identify it. I think that's brilliant, because I tend to give someone something that's absolutely perfect because I want them to think that I'm terrific.
Right.
It's a matter of identifying your flaws. But by the way, I know how to fix panic attacks.
Okay. Is it outsourcing?
No. Because if you've had one panic attack, they will recur in your life unless you actually do something to trigger the way your brain works. I've got a book on it.
Okay.
Yeah. If you want to follow that through at some stage, I'm happy to talk to you about that.
Thank you.
All right, Joseph. So thanks for that, Joseph. Appreciate for bringing that question up, my friend. I think that about does it. No worries, my friend. That about does it for today's episode of Big Fat Marketing. I'll just mute Joseph because I think there's a bit of feedback. All right, so just one more question before we actually tie this off, Earl. And just a simple question by Louise. She asked, do you have an Excel template that you use for managing your reporting and that kind of stuff? Do you have a template that you use, or is it just basically?
I think it's going to be different for every kind of company. But what you want to have is anything that gives you optics, anything you need to measure. So in terms of heart stuff, since we're talking about panic attacks and things, you know, you want to measure you got to measure how your heart is working, right? So there's actually an app called HeartMath that gives you the kind of feedback that you need, so it's really about understanding what you should measure. So for outsourcing, it's about how many people have we managed to get to place this month, and how many should we be placing next month. So it's about deciding what to measure and how often to measure it, because guys, most people aren't measuring anything. Most people are just sticking their finger in the air and going, okay, we'll just see what happens. Going with the flow 100%, instead of saying, okay, we need to measure where the flow is coming from, kind of thing. So it is important to decide on what to measure and then figure out a way to put it into Excel.
Absolutely.
But it should be fairly simple.
Yeah, just a fairly simple, easy to understand. I can't stand reporting that's actually very complicated when all that stuff does not need to be there. You can just have a simple, figures showing what you need to accomplish per day and so on and so forth. But having something very simple, easy to understand, you can just have a glance at it, and then bang, you actually got a good picture and understanding of what actually needs to be worked on and what doesn't need to be worked on. So that about does it, my friend. I really do appreciate you actually taking the time and actually chatting to our big fat marketers. Absolutely. Here. So it's been a lot of fun. Yeah, really good questions, guys. So congratulations, guys, and thank you very much for helping me, for jumping on this Big Fat Marketing call. Now, if you want to know more about Erland, please go to 4hoursperweek.info. You can watch his webinar and learn more about it. If you have any more questions, by all means, please send me an email to ray@bigfatmarketing.com. That's ray@bigfatmarketing.com. And if you want to watch any of our previous episodes, please go to bigfatmarketing.com. So bigfatmarketing.com, you can watch the replay of this webinar here today, and you can watch all the previous ones. So thanks again, guys, for jumping on board, and I'll see you next week. Thank you very much, Erland, and I'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure, my friend. I'd love to be on your show too. Take care, buddy.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.